topic today, as you've already introduced, is Nightify denotification, and I'll be happy to share some of my knowledge with you, most of my knowledge, is what we know, don't know, and thought we knew. So I'll start with explaining what Nightify denotification actually is, then come to the part of what we know about it, and we will already then see some of the parts that we don't know, and that will get worse, actually, when I come to the measuring method and when we're trying to find out how much is really happening and how can we actually measure this. But first, what is Nightify denotification? Well, we've heard a lot of nitrification already, so we know that part. Ammonia is oxidized to nitrite by ammonia oxidizers and then further by nitrite oxidizers to nitrate. Then denitrification comes in. Denitrifiers use nitrate, reduce it to nitrite, further to NO and N2O, up to N2 in the end. And that's done by denitrifiers which are heterotrophic. Well, the reason for us to study this is, and actually we've got a presentation right next door, which is quite interesting. I'll try to tune in with it. Well, please stay here, right? The reason why we are interested in these processes is, of course, that nitrous oxide is being produced there, which is a greenhouse gas. And it can be produced in denitrification, and it can also be produced in nitrification as a byproduct of hydroxylamine oxidation. Well, but the question was, what is Nightify denitrification? So what is it? Is it this pathway? No, it's not. What is marked here is coupled nitrification denitrification. So that's something different. What is Nightify denitrification then? Well, that's a pathway that's being carried out by autotrophic ammonia oxidizers. And they use ammonia, oxidize it up to nitrite, just like what they normally do, and then they reduce this nitrite via NO to N2O and, well, the first question mark, do they actually reduce it up to N2? There is some work that is suggesting that they can do it up to N2, but it's really only been shown for very few nitrifiers so far, so we don't know how common this this trait actually is. Right, so nitrifier denitrification is the oxidation of ammonia to nitrite and then followed by a reduction of this nitrite to, let's call it, well, to N2O. What do we know about this sort of historically? Well, it's been described in 1972, so, well, all through my lifetime, I can say, we have known about nitrify denitrification. And that came through an experiment by Ricci and Nicholas, who used 15N labeled nitrite and looked at the production of N2O from that and found out it's been produced by, 15N labeled N2O is produced from 15N labeled nitrite. And they actually found that this can happen both under aerobic and anaerobic conditions. And this is a question that I would like to go in a little more deeper. What is actually the influence of oxygen on nitrify denitrification? What do we know about this? Is it both aerobic and anaerobic, or is it, like most people think nowadays, mainly anaerobic? What are differences between species? How widespread is nitrify denitrification? And I'll go through some parts of the literature to answer some of these questions. So first, the influence of oxygen. Well, Bock et al. Have made experiments with Nitrosomonas europaea and Eutropha and found that they can grow in oxygen-limiting conditions for several months when they reduce nitrite. And they also found that Nitrosospira eutropha can actually grow in anoxic conditions if it's got H2 as an electron donor and nitrite as electron acceptor. Just some results from them. You see in the full circles here the ammonium concentrations. And you see that over a time frame of more than 100 days, the ammonia concentration did not change. You see here spikes of nitrite. So they added nitrite to the cultures. Nitrite was, well, used. And they added new nitrite when no nitrite was left, and that was used again. And you see in the open circles the N2O production. So you see that N2O was produced in that time. And if you go over to this axis here and look at the triangles, you see the increase in cell numbers over the time. So this was in anaerobic conditions, and the Nitrosomonas eutropha, were actually growing under these conditions. Kester found that the enzymes for nitrify denitrification were actually present at 80% air saturation. What they did was they changed cultures from aerobic to anaerobic conditions and looked at how quickly they got N2O pulses and they got nitrifier denitrification starting. And they found that within 15 minutes in some of the cultures and some of the experiments, this already happened. So it's very quick. And from that they concluded the enzymes already had to be present. Yes, because there were immediate NO and N2O peaks after the conversion. Dundee and Hopkins looked at two different nitrifiers, at Nitrosomonas europaea and at Nitrosolubus multiformis. And they also looked at different initial hot space oxygen concentrations. And you see down here in those two plates the initial oxygen concentrations and the actual dissolved oxygen concentration. And on the upper two slides, the N2O production that was measured. What you can see, please see here, it's a log scale. They saw a spike of N2O in low oxygen conditions in Nitrosomonas europaea, and stable N2O production at higher oxygen concentrations. Whereas in Nitrosolubus, well, there was also some sort of maximum at low oxygen concentrations, but much less so than in Nitrosomonas europaea. And the N2O production stayed quite high through all oxygen concentrations. So to sum up, there is some evidence that nitrifier denitrification might be more important in low oxygen conditions, especially for Nitrosomonas europaea, as you see in these slides. But we've heard before that Nitrosomonas europaea is something that's not so abundant in soils. It's more used in lab experiments, and I'll come back to that later. Whereas other nitrifiers can actually denitrify over a whole range of oxygen conditions. So let's come to differences between species. What can we say about that? Kaskiotti and Ward found that the nitrite reductase in nitrifiers is very similar to the copper-containing nitrite reductase in denitrifiers. But, again, Nitrosomonas europaea had a different nitrite reductase. And this was confirmed also by the complete genome sequence. That's here, this nitrite reductase there was one, or a homolog, but it's not so similar to the denitrification one. So how widespread is nitrifier denitrification in nitrifiers? Can we say anything about that? This is work that Jim Prosser has been involved in as well, as much of the work is that I will be presenting today. I'm glad you didn't mention that in your talk. So what Liz did here is she tested seven strains of Nitrosospira species, and they found that they all carried out nitrifier denitrification in aerobic environments. So they were all capable of it. And she concluded that it might be a universal trait in ammonia oxidizers. And again, she found that Nitrosomonas europaea produced four times more N2O than the next highest producing strain she tested. So again, just like to stress, Nitrosomonas europaea is quite different from the other nitrite oxidizers that we see from the nitrite oxidizers, ammonia oxidizers that are important in soils. Garubeva also studied the NIRK and NORB sequences in Nitrosospira, and she found that they were quite diverse, but again concluded that there might have been lateral transfer from denitrifiers because of similarities between denitrifier gene sequences and the sequences found here. And yeah, but still there was diversity, which is also found by Cantera and Stein, who also found it's not just the sequences, but also the regulation of the genes that differs. So what do we know about nitrifier denitrification? Well, so far we can say, apparently many nitrifiers can denitrify under a range of conditions. The genes are quite diverse, and Nitrosomonas europaea differs from other oxidizers. But how can we measure it, and how can we actually find out how important it is? Well, there are, I would like to talk about three sort of different methods. The first is the method with inhibitors. Second is the stable isotope use with 15N, and the next one the double isotope method with 15N and 18O. When I started my PhD quite some time ago now, there was this one method with inhibitors that that we had, and it made use of acetylene and oxygen. So what does the acetylene do? If you use low concentrations of acetylene, it's supposed to inhibit the ammonia oxidation. And because it's been thought that the ammonia oxidizers need the energy they get from this first part of the reaction to do the second part, it's supposed that also nitrifier denitrification is inhibited if you're adding low concentrations of acetylene. If you're adding high concentrations of oxygen, the two reduction pathways are supposed to be inhibited. Well, that was the state of the art when I started, and I was quite happy to use this method. What you're doing is that you're using four different incubation treatments. First, a control, where you're supposed to get N2O from all the different processes that are taking place in the soil. Then one treatment with low concentrations of acetylene, where nitrification and nitrifier denitrification are inhibited. A third treatment with high concentrations of oxygen, where denitrification and nitrifier denitrification are inhibited. And a fourth one with both acetylene and oxygen, where you should only get those ominous other processes of N2O production, which we might hear about more in later presentations today. So I used this method in a range of soil experiments. And what I found there was that in one third of those incubations, there was more N2O produced with inhibitors than in my control treatments without inhibitors, which was strange. Even stranger, or maybe as strange, in about half of the cases, there was less N2O produced with only one inhibitor than with two inhibitors. So you're adding more inhibitors and you're getting more N2O production. How does that work? Well, I thought maybe soils are too complicated and we need a more simple system to study this. So what we did was we used pure culture experiments, and I must say we were very lucky to use two different organisms, Nitrosomonas europaea and Nitrosospira briensis, for these experiments. So we incubated them just the same, and I'm just going to show you here the results of the control, the acetylene, and the oxygen treatments, to keep it simple. For Nitrosomonas europaea, it produced quite a lot of NTO in the control treatments, and that was nicely reduced both by acetylene and by oxygen inhibitors. Perfect. No problem there. Nitrosospira briensis, that's quite a different story, because here, for some reason, the acetylene inhibition doesn't seem to work. It's not inhibited by low concentrations of acetylene. And I must say we tried higher concentrations as well, and we couldn't get any inhibition no matter what concentration we tried. So something else seems to be happening there. Please don't ask me what. Especially not after this next slide. Right, so we also looked at the nitride production. And for Nitrous Amonas europaea, again, acetylene reduced the nitride production. But here's something strange is happening, because if you're adding oxygen, just remember, you should inhibit the reduction pathways. So you should get oxidation of ammonia to nitrite, but you shouldn't get the reduction. So your nitrite concentration should be at least as high as in the control treatment. Well, it's not significantly different from the control, but there is a trend, and we've repeated this experiment 3 times, there's a trend that there are lower concentrations of nitrite in the oxygen treatment. So what about Nitrous Aspera briensis? Well, remember, they didn't produce N2O with acetylene, but they also don't produce nitrite with acetylene. So while the nitrite production is inhibited, the N2O production is not. I think we need to do some studies about that. And also the same trend here, if you're adding high concentrations of oxygen, it's again not significantly different from the control, but there is the same sort of trend that is a lower concentration. But coming back to this overview of the method, we could say, well, this is what we thought would happen. However, from the experiments which I've just shown, I think we cannot be quite sure about this low acetylene inhibition of nitrification and nitrifier denitrification. Other results, other studies have shown that we can also not be so sure that nothing is happening to denitrification even with low concentrations of acetylene. And, well, something strange is also going on with the high concentrations of oxygen, which is, of course, quite a stress on the organisms and on everything going on in the soils if you're adding sort of 100% oxygen. To sum up this part, I think we shouldn't use this method anymore. So what can we use? Well, we could use stable isotopes, and of course the 50N method has been around for quite some time. What you're doing is you're adding 50N labeled nitrate, and then all your denitrification is labeled with 15N, and also your N2O from denitrification is labeled, so you know how much N2O you get from denitrification. If you're labeling ammonia, N2O from nitrification is labeled, but also your N2O from nitrifier denitrification. And if you're getting nitrate production from nitride, that will also be labeled. And consequently, denitrification, which is coupled to nitrification, will also produce labeled N2O. So with this method, you cannot really distinguish between N2O from nitrification, nitrifier denitrification, and nitrification coupled denitrification. So that doesn't work if we really want to make a differentiation between all these different pathways. So we came up with the dual isotope method. And that's based on the idea, that ammonia oxidizers use oxygen for the oxidation of ammonia, but they use oxygen from water for the oxidation of hydroxyl amine and for the oxidation of nitrite. So they use different sources of oxygen, and your N2O from nitrification should be coming from oxygen, but the N2O from nitrifier denitrification and denitrification, which is coupled to nitrification, should in certain ratios come from oxygen from soil oxygen, but also from soil water. The method we came up with then was based on 4 treatments again, 3 treatments with either single or double labeled ammonium nitrate to do the normal thing as in the 15N method. And a fourth treatment where we added 18O labeled water. And of course, in those first three treatments, we also added water, but it was unlabeled. And in that way, we should be able to differentiate between those different pathways. Well, if we use that method, how much what are we actually talking about? How much N2O is being produced by nitrifier denitrification? How important is this pathway? Should we really spend half an hour talking about this? Is it important? Well, we tested the dual isotope method against the inhibitor method, which I've already explained to you that it didn't work. But still, we needed some reference, and we wanted to know both something about the inhibitor method, but also about the dual isotope method. And the results we got were in green here for N2O from denitrification, white from nitrification, and you see the inhibitor method has a much lower value for denitrification than you get from the dual isotope method. In white, as I said, nitrification. In yellow is what we are interested in today, namely the nitrifier denitrification part. And you see that although those methods are both quite different, and one of them doesn't actually work, and we hope the other one, well, we thought at that time the other one worked, you're getting with both methods quite a high estimate for N2O from nitrifier denitrification. So independent of the method, it seemed that nitrifier denitrification might be very important for nitrous oxide production. In fact, of the processes studied here, it might be the main source of N2O from soils, from this soil, I must say. So what do we know about nitrifier denitrification, to come back to my title and to sum up my presentation? Nitrifier denitrification is ammonia oxidation coupled with the reduction of nitride, and is carried out by autotrophic ammonia oxidizers. It seems to be very common among nitrifiers, and it's being done under a range of conditions, not only under anaerobic conditions, but also under more aerobic conditions. And different enzymes are involved, which seem to be, in a lot of cases, quite similar to the enzymes involved in denitrification. What we thought we knew, and this is one of the difficult parts, we thought we knew it could be measured using inhibitors. Well, no, it's not reliable. And now comes the most difficult part for me, because we thought we could measure it with the dual isotope method, and we thought that was no problem. Well, please come to Doreen's presentation tomorrow at 9:45, room 218, and you will get to know more about this. There are certain problems, and we haven't overcome them yet, and I guess we will not in the near future, but we are a great community here, and maybe some people can help. So please come tomorrow. And now the things that we don't know, and that we really need to go into and find out more. Is it really universal among nitrifiers? How many can actually do it? Why is it carried out? There are some suggestions. Well, first of all, it's being done under low oxygen conditions, but we saw today that it's not only low oxygen conditions, it can also be other conditions. It's been said it's being carried out if nitrite concentrations are high, to sort of detoxify high nitrite. Could be, but is it really? Is it only done under high nitrite conditions? I don't really think so, but what are the conditions? What triggers nitrifier denitrification? Of course, we need a method first to find out, to measure it, before we can actually answer this question. And then we might be able to answer the question, how important is it for global N2O production? And one question which I think is also very important, can nitrifiers actually reduce N2O to N2? Because then it could be another sink for N2O, like denotification in soils, that N2O can be taken up again, reduced to N2. Maybe nitrifiers also play a role in that via nitrifier denitrification. But we don't know yet, and I think we should start measuring that. With that, I come to my thanks, and I would first like to thank the organizers for inviting me here. It's been a great pleasure for me to come. I would really like to thank Jim, because, well, first with your book on you edited on nitrification, that was one of the first things I read when I started my my PhD thesis, and really brought me on, as well as your further contributions to this field, which I've named a few of them today. I'd like to thank the German Research Foundation for Trevor Gant for getting me here, and the Robert Bosch Foundation for a Fast Track Grant. And I'd like to thank all of you for coming here in such great numbers and being so patient with my presentation. Thank you very much.
We've got time for about 5 minutes or 4 minutes for discussion, for comments or questions.
The question is whether in the experiment with acetylene, what was the time of addition of the acetylene? Well, we normally added the acetylene, as is quite common, at the time that the experiment started, but we measured at different times afterwards. So we didn't just add the acetylene and then measure 24 hours later, but we also had experiments where we measured them after 2 hours, 4 hours, and then maybe 24 hours. So at different stages.
I was struck in the comparison of the inhibitor and the isotope, dual isotope, that the nitrification and the nitrifier denitrification, and if you lump the other and the denitrification together, they actually matched up remarkably well. And given that you said that the inhibitors really look like they don't work at all with cultures, the fact that they actually matched well was striking. I wonder what your thoughts are on this.
For those in the back, I'm not sure whether you can hear the questions. The question is, I can go back to the slide. This one. In this slide, why the two methods, which have so much in common and have so similar results, actually, while I said before that the inhibitor method didn't work. Well, I can say about that we chose our soil well, and we chose actually a soil that had been tested on this method before and that had been tested with acetylene and added labeled ammonia to see how well this inhibition really happened. So yeah, I guess we just chose the soil where this worked, and therefore.
But you wouldn't expect to see that same kind of good match up in other
conditions. No, definitely not. No, no. An inhibitor for the nitrite oxidation step. First of all, I must say I don't really believe in inhibitors anymore, as you probably can understand. I'm not currently aware of a nitrite oxidation inhibitor that's actually proving successful in soil use. If anyone can comment on that. Chemicals that scavenge nitrite—that's a good suggestion, actually. I'm not much of a chemist, but that might be a possibility. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Why the oxygen condition to get
This was being done at 60% oxygen, 60% water filled pore space, sorry.